You're listening to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. All right, this week we have on a very special guest, Ezra Koenig. You probably know him as the lead singer and guitarist of Vampire Weekend, but he also has a very deep cult-like following for the internet radio show he's done since 2015, Time Crisis, where he and co-host Jake Longstreth talk about everything from music to politics to corporate food history. So, Carla Music and I, both proud TC heads, talk to Ezra about how he makes music, how he eats, and so much more. And then, it's Alex Beggs with yet another installment of Cook, Marry, Kill. All right, here's Ezra. All right, I don't want to start this on a down note, guys, but I was at the bagel shop this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I think today is SantaCon.
Oh, I guess I saw some people a little bit dressed up on the street. I didn't see a full squad of Santas, but I saw...
I think like the squads come out around 11 a.m. This was like at 8:40 a.m.
I've blissfully not seen anyone in a Santa costume yet today.
And the bros like in the ironic Christmas sweaters and stuff. Like,
right.
They were carving up at Murray's Bagels.
Okay.
Mm. Is that what... these are Murray's Bagels?
These are from Murray's on the one on 8th
Avenue.
Oh,
these are pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not bad. I was shocked at, like, I got in there at 8:39. There was already 19 people in line. I counted. I kind of thought, like, the bagel thing at some point would sort of subside in New York as
right.
an era of, like, Sweet Green and Asahi bowls and stuff.
Really?
I don't know. You don't
That's
think
like
so?
That's like saying pizza's going to fade or something.
Yeah, but people don't buy, like, hot dogs on the street corner like they used to.
No, but a bagel. You don't have to buy a bagel out of a tray of dirty water.
Well, that's true. I do not. I just, like, I'm, like... I'm trying to be like healthy guys-ish somewhat, as you know, but I don't know.
Would you get your bagel scooped?
That whole thing's just, yeah, that's, well, you know, I would, no, because that just seems such a, can I get that scoop? But I would do the, like, the, do you ever get the flat bagels?
The flagel.
The flagel?
No. Are they like crackers?
No, they're.
That exists too, though. Bagel, like a bagel crisp.
Oh, bagel with chip. Those are nonsense.
No,
yeah.
Flagel is just like a very low profile bagel. I kind of like the, when they're
so
good,
it's soft.
It's still soft.
Yeah. On the inside, but crunchy on the outside. It's kind of like a flatbread meets a bagel. Because I think some of these New York ones have gotten so bulbous.
Like, yeah. These do look a little bulbous.
Yeah,
that's
like
a good word.
Michelin man bagels. So I'll get the flat ones sometimes and then put all the fix-ins on and stuff.
Do you order it as a flagel or do you say, I'll take the flat bagel?
I'll say, can I get a flat everything?
Mm.
You know.
Mm.
But then I like, I've definitely come around to like, do I like to put some cucumber on. I brought some cucumber down this morning.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting that was the one thing that you brought.
The one condiment?
Yeah. Well, there's cream cheese.
There's cream cheese.
Cucumber.
Well, the cucumber, because we have this test kitchen on the 35th floor here, as Carlo knows, and you can kind of go in the big walk-in fridge, like, what's in there to bring?
Oh, I see.
So
I see.
Normally, I would have done avocados, but we didn't have any avocados.
Oh, avocados.
Do you ever do that? You live in California now.
I don't eat bagels that often in California.
Why would you?
Yeah.
Did you back here
it's
back
not
in
part
the day?
Of the culture.
True.
Like yeah, what? Sure. I'm a when in Rome type person. So for the first 30 years of my life in between New York and New Jersey, definitely a lot of bagels were consumed.
Toasted or fresh?
I think if they're good, they don't need to be toasted. I know that that's can be controversial with some people, but I think when you go somewhere when it's piping fresh out hot at the mm-hmm. oven and it's still soft, that's great. But
I
you know,
agree. I think day of...
I think the classic thing growing up was on the weekend, your parents would come back with like a brown paper sack
yep.
of bagels. And then as the week went on, they had to be toasted.
Yeah.
Right.
Like Wednesday, it's like rock hard. Of course you toast it.
Right.
I like the, when you do toast them, then I like doing butter and cream cheese. And so the butter gets all melty and then the cream cheese sort of sloshes around on the melted butter.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying.
I like a fresh.
Emma just gave the thumbs up on that one.
Really? I like a fresh bagel with softened butter. That, like, before you even have your real bagel.
Yeah.
You have that.
Like
the bagel before the bagel.
Yeah.
So anyways.
We just lost half our audience.
Yeah. No, that's what they came for.
Now we're going to lose them.
Okay. Now we're going to talk about rock and roll. What'd you have for dinner last night?
Last night for dinner. Actually, this is a place I'd wanted to go for a while. Just meeting up with some friends, and they suggested this place in the East Village called The Izakaya.
Hmm. I mean, I know what an izakaya is, but I don't know the izakaya.
Yeah, it's of course, you know, when you're like putting it into your
right.
Mass app,
right.
A billion things come up.
No, the.
No, yeah, the.
It's on East 6th or East 7th or something, and it's a real skinny, you know, it's next to the East Village Suwen.
Mm.
Oh.
Whichever street that is. Yeah, it's like a cool little hip
izakaya.
Izakaya, but you know, like a slight tweak, and I appreciated that when you got there, there was kind of like a not like a fancy uptight prefix thing, but just this thing that said like, I forget what the language they used, but it was kind of like you want to be full or something. It was like two people, three people, and then just a list of stuff and a price.
Perfect.
And it was a nice mix of stuff like potato salad and
grilled things.
Mackerel and grilled things. And
I appreciate that you said prefix and not prefix.
It's tough with French words. In fact, how do you guys pronounce those crescent moon shaped pastries that are famous in France?
And when I'm in America, I would say croissant.
I would say croissant.
So you say it with the qua.
Yeah.
Marlon, my son's here. Marlon, you had one this morning. How do you say it? His mouth is full.
I mean, when we're joking, we say croissant.
Right. But even when you take it to the qua place, then you're living in a funny middle ground.
Well, what do you say?
Well, I've never been clear about it.
Oh, will you say croissant?
That's why I stopped getting them.
You might do croissant.
I think I used to, well, and also like I took French, not that I speak French, but I took French, you know, that was my high school language. So yeah, I know that it's pronounced like something like croissant, but
croissant.
But then it's funny to just do this half thing.
Yes, totally.
So in some ways I almost respect the croissant crowd more. I used to think it was, not that this ever happened, but I used to think it was funny that at wherever they had that Dunkin' Donuts or Burger King where they have the croissant witch.
Yes.
I thought it'd be funny to pronounce that croissant witch.
I would like a croissant witch, please.
But other than the croissant witch, I try to just go with the flow.
You should order a croissant witch and then eat it with a knife and fork.
Yeah.
My Jacques Torres story about he claims to have really invented the croissant witch.
What do you mean?
Really?
Yeah, he was working, French chef, right? He has pastry chef, famous for the chocolate.
And was the pastry chef at Le Cirque, where he kind of rose to fame.
Before that, when he kind of first got to the U.S., he ended up in L.A. working at a hotel. So let's say it was a Beverly Hills hotel, but I'm not really sure if it was. And he was making these croissants the way he made them in France, which are like, they're small. You know, they're not like these big hunkin' loaves of whatever. And the guy who owned the restaurant was like, these are amazing. Like, make them bigger. And he was like, bigger? Like, this is the right size, you know, whatever. Yes. Like, 80 grams.
A croissant's like, a croissant.
This is
croissant.
Correct. He's like, bigger.
Correct.
Make them bigger. So he kept making them bigger. I'm like, I don't know what this is, but this is like an American thing. Like, bigger and bigger and bigger. And then he was like, it's amazing. Now put ham and cheese on it. And put ham and cheese on it. He's like, these people are insane.
And now you can put it in a glass case and sell it any time of day.
Yeah. And then they were like, he was like, now it's perfect. And they started selling them poolside and sold like hotcakes. Next thing you know, you got a croissant sandwich.
Next thing you know, they're at Burger King and Dunkin' Donuts.
I really don't know how to say it. Having a hard time.
I do like croissant wheat.
So let's say you're flying back to L.A. and you're sitting next to someone and they're like, so what do you do? And you're like, oh, I got this, like, play music and I've got like a podcast. And they're like, well, what's the podcast? Should I listen
to
it?
I don't have a podcast.
You have a show.
You have a show.
I have an internet radio show.
Yeah. Okay, so... Well, how would you? So I'm sitting next to you, and I'm like, well, what's the difference between a podcast and an internet radio show?
Well, I just explained that our show, it airs.
Yes.
Because Apple has a radio station that's on any Apple phone. So it airs, which, you know, I think has a little bit of a kind of old school sophistication. In that there's an airtime, but then immediately it basically becomes a podcast.
Which is how I think that's. I've never listened. When is it on live?
It's on Sundays.
It's not live though when it airs.
Well, it's new.
Right.
It's newly
it's released like content.
It's like must-see TV.
Yeah, when there was a new episode of Seinfeld on TV, it wasn't a live performance.
That's
but
what I'm saying.
It was
he
brand
said
new.
It's live.
Yeah.
It's like new. It just came out.
Right. Whenever we recorded it, it's the first time airing. And then after that, it's behind a paywall on the Apple, you know, if you have to use Apple Music.
Yeah. We're a family subscription plan. So I've never had this terrible feeling of not being able to access it.
Right. If you're not an Apple subscriber, it would be a little bit tricky. But yes, at the end of the day, it's very similar to a podcast.
So, all right. So, yeah, you.
So this is all what I would be saying to the person.
And Julia Kramer, who's not here right now, she's our deputy editor, and she was always talking about time crisis. And I was like, okay, whatever. And like that, to the point that she said, I canceled my Spotify subscription and only have Apple Music because of time crisis.
Perfect story.
So eventually I was like, my wife, who for some reason she had Apple Music, she has Tidal because like when the Kanye and Beyonce albums come out, she got Tidal, she's got Spotify, she has all these things on her phone. And I'm like, I don't know if you need all those. But then we were driving in the car some time ago and we put on a time crisis and I was instantly like, why have I not been listening to this my whole life? I mean, it is literally the best thing on the internet. I hate to be like fanboy, but it's just like, I literally can't get enough.
It's definitely a cult show. I've been happy to find out, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, but I've been somewhat happy to find out that there are fans of the show, we colloquially known as TC heads, who are not Vampire Weekend fans.
I was going to ask you that, so that's fascinating.
Yeah, well, one time we kind of talked about it, and we were just kind of wondering out loud, and then like a bunch of people started like tweeting at the account, which is run by a guy who's part of the show, Seinfeld 2000. Yeah, people started tweeting at him, and he kind of forgot that we talked about it on the show, so people started just tweeting at him, just kind of like, listen, I don't like Vampire Weekend, but I like Time Crisis, and I appreciated it. He was kind of defensive for me and wrote back just like, fuck you, nobody asked, and I was like, we did ask. We did ask, and you know, when you start an internet radio show, I think the hope is that even if you're starting with, you know, fans of your music or something, that one day it will transcend that. It will have a voice of its own.
They're really two different things. There's a wonderful overlap. But like, I'm a Vampire Weekend fan.
Mm-hmm.
But the feelings that I have for Time Crisis are unique to Time Crisis in a lot of ways.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's how it should be, I think.
Julia turned me on to it. Uh-huh. And then we became mutually, you know, obsessed and would talk about episodes.
Yeah, and if you haven't listened and out then, there, listener, I mean, yeah, it's like, it's you and Jake. I have a lot of things I love about the show. Some of it is just your sort of cultural references and allusions are just so dead on that you're like, oh my God, that is so good. One episode you guys were talking about where Jake grew up in Connecticut, maybe it was the Diet Coke episode or something, and talking about 1977 and like, oh, the Southbury Shopping Plaza opened this year.
Oh, the year he was born.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The phrase shopping plaza is so 1977. There are no more shopping plazas. No one of the Marlon's age, my son here, they don't even know what a plaza is.
Right.
But like, you know, but the notion, and then a McDonald's opened, and like back then in 1970s, I remember like when the McDonald's opened in D.C. on Jennifer Street, like in 1978, and that was a huge deal. The fact that there was a McDonald's in your neighborhood.
Right.
It was like a thing.
Yeah. No, we're very interested in that kind of sifting through the sands of pop culture, and specifically with an eye, I guess, towards, I don't know, music, food, retail.
You weave a tapestry of, yes. But then, okay, I've got lots of thoughts. But then also, and Emma always hears me talk about this, the fact that because it's on Apple Music, you guys can then actually play song. You have the rights, the ability to play music.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, that's another thing that makes us different from a podcast is that we can play songs as long as we want. I think there is some kind of fair use, some like pathetically small fair use thing if you want to play like 10 seconds of a song anywhere. But
so we can do that?
I think you probably could play
Emma, 10 you hear that?
We can't do that in the videos, apparently.
Oh, really?
None amount of anything is
and
allowed.
I imagine that Condé Nast lawyers are just like super hardcore
all
stressed out.
That.
So
yeah.
They'll probably, if you even remotely
but even humming, like
right.
Not even playing
Let me
it,
ask
but
you a
humming
question.
A song.
Yeah. Can you, let's say you sang a bar from Harmony Hall, that's the song, like right now, could we do that? Or do we get sued by your record company? Even though it's your song, would they be like, no, Ezra can't do that?
Well, if you want to get inside baseball, the record company doesn't own the publishing. So if I'd be essentially be creating a new recording of Harmony Hall, the record company wouldn't control that.
Mm.
They control the recordings that...
Who owns the publishing rights to that song?
Well, I do.
You do, okay.
But, you know, we work with a publishing company and you do these kind of temporary deals and stuff. But, yeah, I wonder if there is some way, if I sang Harmony Hall on this show, then I could go back and sue you guys.
All right, can you do a line? Like, let's say you do a line right now.
Right. And the stone walls of Harmony Hall bear witness. I think you're allowed to quote lyrics.
you can definitely quote, like, if we're talking about Goodfellas or something, I think we can, like, play the clip in which we're talking about it from a sort of a news reporting standpoint.
Yeah. I will say generally that I do think copyright law's out of control. Yeah, people should be able to, like, quote stuff. But anyway, on Time Crisis, because when people listen to Time Crisis and they're Apple Music subscribers, if we play a song, then Apple will just go ahead. So, for instance,
you can actually like and love the song. So if a song starts playing during the show.
Oh, you can, like, throw a heart
on
it.
Yeah, and I'm like, love the song, need to remember. I can heart it, and it'll save to my, like, library of loved songs.
That's one cool thing that I guess up to a point is fair, is that if we play a show on the song, it registers for that artist just like if somebody streamed it.
Right. Or like any
but
talk radio show.
But shouldn't it be more if, like, 100,000 people hear it? I wonder if they get credit.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I actually don't know how it works. You know, Apple's a big tech company. They're not cracking open the books for us.
Have you gotten feedback from anyone who has told you that it's great to listen to while at the gym?
No, I haven't heard that in particular.
Oh, well, I would like to tell you that it's
great to listen to
at the gym because you get a great mix of comedy, discourse. You
music,
get highs, like, and lows, and then you get some musical interludes.
Like, you're on the treadmill, you're like, I need a little pick me up, and then all of a sudden,
treadmill,
oh, that's fun.
Some circuit training.
There's like some Billy Joel or something.
It's one of my faves.
I could imagine even a really great podcast, if just like in a super dry room, just a few voices. That you need to be in the right mood for that. You also need to be in the right mood for music.
Well, like, if I'm like doing my workout and it's Rachel Maddow, I'm like, you know what? I'm starting to feel upset.
Yeah. Mm.
Whereas you want to be uplifted, but also entertained.
I also like the length of it. We always talk about here, and Emma always, someone gives me grief about how long the podcasts are. If a podcast is good, I'm more than happy if it's an hour and 45 minutes as opposed to 45 minutes. And so if you're at the gym, you're just getting totally ripped, I imagine, for an hour
Super
and 45
ripped.
Minutes.
I mean, look at me.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
yeah. We do 2 hours every 2 weeks.
Right. But ours are like, I also feel like with podcast people, expect it to run the certain length. Like, I have podcasts that I listen to that I know are 50, and then certain, like the daily, that's like the length of my commute. If the daily all of a sudden was like an hour and 20, I'd be like, calm down, Michael.
Right,
Barbaro.
That would be weird. That's
this
not
is
what
like
they're
we're,
supposed to
yeah,
do.
This is not, I haven't allotted the right amount of time for you.
Yeah.
And you're stepping into like other parts of my life.
I like the idea of a long podcast. But I think people would need to be prepared.
That's true. Hydrated and like ready.
Know what they're getting into.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was at a fish show last week. And with fish, you understand you're going to be on the premises for probably 4 hours.
Right.
And there's a set break. And of course, it's significantly longer than a lot of shows. But everybody there knows what's about to happen and is excited for it.
Right.
So, you know, if it turns into 4.5 hours, you already knew.
You're committed. You wore comfy shoes and you're good.
Right.
Speaking of like crossover and Venn diagrams, are there any fish fans who aren't also dead fans?
There's definitely dead fans who aren't fish fans.
Yeah.
Understandably, because the dead were the originators of the jam band scene. Mm-hmm. And even though a lot of people started following fish after Jerry died, of course, there must have been some old crunchy holdouts who were like, I don't know about this. Fish has such a big fan base, it wouldn't shock me. I've never met a Fish fan who doesn't like the dead.
Okay.
And of course, the members of Fish are, they talk in glowing terms about the dead, even though their music is quite different. But I could totally picture a Fish fan who's like, you know what, Fish came out when I was like, a teenager, I got so deep, and then everybody's like, oh, you got to check out the dead, and it wasn't hitting the same way.
And they never saw the dead live because they're too young or something, or I guess you can kind of see whatever version, Dead & Co. or whatever, even today, but.
Yeah, it would be unusual, I think.
It's a little bit like a TC head being like, I don't care for Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, it would be weird if you like really hated it. I can totally understand being like, you know what?
True.
I like your radio show. Your music's not for me. To be like, when I listen to your music, I hate it so much.
Get upset.
But when I hear you and your friend talking about Dunkin' Donuts,
right?
I love it.
Yeah.
That would be strange to be that extreme, but who knows?
I don't understand people. I get it if you're like a big Slater fan or something, but people I know who don't like Vampire. I'm like, how do you not like Vampire Week? You're a very likable band. You know, it's like you put on Vampire Weekend, you're not like, oh God, turn that off. You're like, oh, good song, good, just, you, I don't know. You know what I mean? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, but it's not hard for me to understand. I mean, because of course I've had to grapple with it my entire adult life. Why do some people seem
like
to
this?
Dislike this band so much? I mean, it was easy to understand when we first came out, and I think we still have this image to some people, because when we first came out, we were students at Columbia, and I personally found the idea of starting a preppy band to be so funny, because I didn't consider myself preppy, but I liked to go to thrift stores and find old Lacoste shirts, which at the time seemed very exotic and novel to me. And even going to Columbia, I was surrounded by people who went to Andover and famous East Coast private schools. But even me, you know, I middle class, you know, coming from Jersey. My dad's from the Bronx. My mom's from Jersey. I had student loans, you know. So there's something funny about kind of like, I thought that there was a bit of satire immediately worked into it. Some people got it immediately. And then other people really were just like so offended by it. And now I can look back on it and say that the fact that all these years later, even though I think it has very little to do with where we're at now, people still can associate Vampire Weekend with things like, you know, Oxford button downs and,
right,
and boat shoes is actually a good thing because it's this kind of pillar of American fashion that there's no other band that people think of. So it's actually kind of a good thing. So I could understand why maybe, you know, if you hear about a band coming out and you check them out and you see me wearing like a yellow dog sweater, it's like kind of, you know, 23-year-old dude. And you're like, what's the story of these guys met at Columbia? I can understand being like, not for me.
Yeah.
And then, of course, not everybody likes major key music, and a significant percentage of our music is major key.
Thank you for saying major key. I never use that phrase, but I'm like, no, I like songs that I can actually hum and have like make me feel.
Well, and also, not everybody is going to use that language, because, I mean, I think most people understand it, but it's, you know, whatever. It's a music term, major versus minor.
Never heard of it before, personally.
But I do think a lot of people, you know, things come in out of fashion. Like what's been kind of cool, innovative pop music for the past 5+ years generally has been slower and more likely to be minor key. People write essays about that. Well, the reason that's happening is because of the recession in 2009 made people, and then the way that people feel about the promise of the Obama years not paying off, and you know, people can do that.
Right.
I tend to think that it's more just like sometimes, you know, one thing's popular, and then it's not. Then the opposite is.
I feel like I feel like we mentioned that, and I think of like someone like The Weeknd.
Well, The Weeknd's a very innovative, important artist who I think helped usher in. It's interesting the terms that people used when The Weeknd first came out, and Drake to some extent, that it was like, wow, what is this intense, weird, dark music? Wow, it's like you feel like you're spend a whole night on drugs, and people were, even though there's always been music about sadness, those are the two big things. Most music's actually about being sad deep down, but some of the things that The Weeknd was saying and Drake, some of that language, and then subsequently Future, you know, it felt like kind of a wave or a movement, and I like a lot of that stuff, but yeah, understandably, sometimes when I could see when people hear some of our songs that are fast, major key, and kind of yelpy, that they could be put off by it. But I guess the other thing is that I believe now that we've made 4 albums, we've covered a lot of ground. And if you're a Vampire Weekend fan, you know that we have like, or you come to a show or something, you'll say like, we can bust out like a ballad, we can bust out kind of like a Dark Night of the Soul type song about, you know, faith or something. And then we can also play like our best known song, A-Punk, which is like makes people go, hey, 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 you know? So you know that there's all those different entry points, but also, you know, once somebody has an impression, you can't expect them to, every time you put out an album, to be like, well, I'm going to listen to this whole thing and see if I can finally find my way in.
Right.
So I think to some extent, you know, you can't be liked by everybody. And then generally, if you build a whole career, I always think about Billy Joel, you know, coming from a tri-state area perspective.
Sure.
And how he famously was always getting like shit on by the critics. And infamously, Robert Christgau, very influential critic at the Village Voice, somebody who would represent a type of downtown New York cool taste, would just like lay into him all the time. And apparently Billy Joel would be like on stage reading the reviews, and he was kind of irate. And you can imagine Billy's already this guy with identity issues, Jewish guy, wants to be Italian. He's from out in Long Island, and then here he is downtown, and the hipsters are hating on him, you know.
He's wearing his Capizios.
Yeah, so he probably didn't feel that cool. And you know, I found it interesting to look through Robert Christgau's reviews over the years, and you would see, because they're somewhat well archived, you'd see he used to give letter grades. So, you know, Billy Joel's just like failing.
Oh, wow.
Just getting real bad grades.
Wow.
And then there was something funny about when his Greatest Hits came out, which is one of the best-selling albums in American history.
Yeah.
Volumes 1 and 2 or something. I remember Christgau, like when you look on his website, he's like, A-, you know, this guy, he's a showman, whatever. And you picture like Billy Joel probably like suffering all these years being like, God, you know. Even Chrissy Brinkley's my wife, but these people still don't respect me. And you kind of think sometimes you need to just build a body of work, and only much later can people look back on it and say, yeah, you know, there's a lot of music out there. You can't be for everybody.
Right. It's very subjective. Yeah, I mean, so many things.
I always say this at work, but in terms of writing or to have a point of view, if you're not pissing someone off, you're not doing your job, because it suggests that you're not taking a stand one way or the other. You know, like there should be something that bothers some people and other people love.
Right.
I've never had this problem.
Yeah. I tell everyone else at work that Carla, she just runs with it. Yeah.
And I think about that every time you put out a new album, is that at the end of the day, when people look back at artists they really respect or who have people give them props, like you had a real career. Generally speaking, these people changed quite a bit from album mm-hmm. to album. It's impossible to do that without there being some type of upheaval when music comes out. And you get every range of opinion. People saying, the new music sounds the same. The new music sounds too different. I miss this. I don't like this. So, and I have to believe that if there is some type of overarching quality, that eventually you'll be stronger for it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. There's always going to be like temporary upheaval when, you know, it's like hilarious to think about all these moments in Not to compare, we're not comparing us to him, but just when you look at rock history or something, you look at Bob Dylan, people would always talk about like, wow, people freaked out when he went electric. And you're kind of like, a few people freaked out. I think he also, clearly he did fine. And then even people were like, oh, you know, people were so pissed when he went Christian. And now I listen back to that music and I'm like, those Christian records rule.
Yeah.
Like, they were mad that Bob Dylan went, what else was he supposed to do? He already did everything else, you know?
But I think the difference is between, like, someone like Bowie, who obviously had so many different moments in his career, and you guys, your band, and you as a creative person, like, you've kind of come up in the age of social media. So you're not just hearing it from the critic at Rolling Stone or Village Voice.
Right.
You're getting this avalanche of comments on, I don't know, if you're on Twitter, Instagram, whatever.
Yeah.
And how do you yourself deal with
right.
that?
Right. Billy Joel thought it was bad in the 70s.
Yeah.
I know. I love the idea of him reading these bad reviews, like the original, you know, celebrities read mean tweets.
Yeah.
Right.
So how have you evolved in your sort of social media sort of interfacing over
well,
the years?
Do you take it in even? A lot of people don't engage. I mean, as a strategy.
I think over the years I've realized that I don't find it hard to stop myself from whatever the craziest thing somebody could do is what, like do a deep search of their own name or the name of their band or something. And that there are people who do that, and you could see the most insane, weird opinions. You'd probably even see positive opinions that made you feel uncomfortable if you looked at every single thing. So you can't help but see certain things. When I talk to people who claim that they never read press or something, that doesn't quite work for me, because I would just kind of feel like if the record came out, I would know that probably 40 to 50 places around the world reviewed it or talked about it.
Right.
And I'm just kind of like, I'm just picturing what, like getting on the phone with my manager to talk about something and be like, yeah. So, you know, that would feel kind of bizarre and dishonest. So I think there's ways to be like, I certainly don't read every single one, but at the very least, And sometimes it is good to see what the haters are saying within reason. But yeah, in terms of comments, I mean, I kind of got put off by Twitter, but not even because of comments directed at me, just because of the whole thing.
Oh, it's a dark place.
Yeah.
Vitriolic.
And then, you know, Instagram, you're going to get a mix of stuff, and I don't know.
This is generally more positive. I think the comments that hurt the most, and I got off Twitter a few years ago, but Carl, I imagine you can relate to this with, now, Carl does a gazillion videos that do a gazillion views for us at Bon Appetit. It's the comments that are like 38% true. It's like, for the most part, you're like, no, that's wrong, but oh, there is actually something about what you said that I could see why you'd say that about me and why, you would find me annoying or off-putting.
I think when I, at the beginning, when we first started putting out videos, I would look because I was curious what the feedback was because I wanted to watch the video and kind of think about how certain things that I was doing, whether they landed or how it, you know, how it looked and whatever. Because it's food and it's demonstration. So like certain things that you're like stopping to show something, like, did that actually work in the moment? And then I would look at the comments. And then I really had to stop because a bunch of people didn't like my voice.
Yeah.
Like they thought it, you know, people would be like, she's so nasally. And like one was, I'm Italian, but I would get a lot of like, who is this Jewish woman? And why is her voice so nasally?
Oh.
I was like, well, first of all, I'm Italian, but second of all, why does it matter? And third of all, that's just like, that's not something I can control. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going
to
know.
It matters to me who's Jewish and Italian. I like to know, but
not in a bad way.
It's a fine line.
Like, I feel like I had to put my foot down to be like, I'm Italian, but like, as if being Jewish is a bad thing. It's not. I'm like, happy to be Jewish, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the thing that I was like, this is, now I'm going to be self-conscious about my voice. Like, talk about the last thing you can like do anything about.
Right.
So then I stopped. Well, you can probably modulate your voice a lot more than I could.
A little bit. But I also kind of feel like if somebody, I don't know, maybe because I'm not just a singer and I probably care more about songwriting. I really do my best as a singer and I've tried to get better over the years. But if somebody's just like, man, I hate this guy's voice. It's that actually doesn't hurt my feelings. Maybe because I feel like, all right, then we're at an impasse.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly.
You know?
But also,
it didn't hurt my feelings. It was just like the uselessness of reading a comment. If that's going to be the substance of it, is like there's no gain. There's nothing for me to get out of this.
Two thoughts. Like, one is, as Emma knows, like, commenters would always get infuriated with me for talking over people on the podcast. So I was like, okay, that's actually good to know.
Right.
I'm going to try to talk over people less. But like the anger and vitriol with which they comment is just like, hey, Adam, you might want to stop talking over people. It's like, what the, why are you? And it's like, okay.
Right.
But then also the voice thing is interesting. Like, your voice is annoying. I mean, imagine how many people said that about Bob Dylan back in the 60s. And now he's Bob Dylan.
What
are you going to say to somebody? No, his voice is not annoying. it's like, of course, different people are going to like different voices. And part of what makes him cool is that his voice is unusual.
Right.
I think that's also the thing is to realize that, like you said, if you do something that remotely has character or vibe, it needs to alienate some people. It's not just like, oh, well, maybe this time I finally figured out the thing that everybody in the world is going to like. If it didn't alienate some people, it would be so bland.
Right.
And it's like that's the weird Faustian bargain of trying to put something out into the world is that the vast majority of things that are put into the world, you know, people always talk about like on Spotify or something, it's like 3% of the music accounts for 99% of the streams, which, you know, is probably also like a corporate media monoculture stuff, but also a little bit of just like there's a lot of random stuff that people put up that nobody was asking for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the same thing's true on YouTube. For every video with a billion views, there's probably a billion videos with 2 views that you know.
Yeah, or like all of the things my 10-year-old watches, which I'm like, why? What is this and why does it exist and why are you watching it? And he's like, it's great.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, but if it has an audience, then maybe there's a reason for it to exist. So I guess what I'm saying is that there is a way to have your person and your work never critiqued by strangers on the internet, and that is to make sure it lives so low, that it never pokes its head up above, you know. And it's essentially to be ignored.
Right.
So I guess I always have to remind myself of that. People can cross the line with comments or invading your privacy. Nobody deserves that. But you did you know, you stepped into the town square and said, hey, check this shit out.
Right.
And if a couple people say, fuck you, that sucks, that's actually a fair trade-off.
Yeah.
Sure.
And, you know, but it's easy to forget that because we're all human with the emotions, but it's fair.
Yeah.
You got on stage at the Apollo. Maybe the Sandman is going to bring you off.
Right.
And maybe you'll come back next week and you'll have, you know, you learned something.
That's right.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Before we get to lightning round, because our podcast, Emma just reminded me, is not 2 hours. all right, so now you've spent a lot of years on the road. On the road. Mm-hmm. What's the Bob Seger song? Is it Bob Seger? Yeah. That Metallica covered?
Turn the Page.
Yeah, Turn the Page.
Here I am on the road again.
All right.
Great song.
We don't have to pay for that, Emma. You've got a kid now.
Mm-hmm.
Are you more conscious of sort of living, eating more healthy while on the road? Like, do you have like a routine, like with room service or breakfast in the morning? Or are you just getting pizza late at night after the show?
I'm still trying to figure it out because the schedule of being on tour is so strange. It's certainly very different than, you know, being at home or being at home with a child. When you're on tour, and especially because you're always like jet lagged and stuff. So, for instance, you toured Europe a month ago. You get there, you're all like turned around. You can't sleep well. You want to sleep all day, basically. And because of the nature of our job, you probably should.
Right.
There's no reason why when you need to have your peak, I need to hit my peak of physical performance and fitness at generally, I think lately it's been like 8:30 p.m.
Right.
8:30 or 9. So in what universe would it make sense for me to set my alarm for 7 or 8 or even 10 or even noon? So I try to just sleep as long as I possibly can. And then, you know, I wake up and you know, usually I try not to eat early. You know, just one of those things where like I heard somebody say once like, oh yeah, don't eat breakfast. And I was like, all right. I won't eat breakfast. The one problem that I do have, though, is I try to eat healthy during the day, and I'm thoughtful about that. But then after the show, you always have a sense of accomplishment and relief just because you made it through the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if it's a feeling that was driven into me by playing in the saxophone in the school band in middle school, and you perform one concert like a year, and like, wow, we did it. Let's go get ice cream. Actually, where I grew up, we always went to Holston's, which is where the final scene of The Sopranos was.
Oh.
So that was our go-to spot.
Cool.
And, you know, you go get ice cream or something. So I think that feeling, which is actually which is inappropriate when you play a show every single night, it is a little bit of get off stage like, wow, thank God, we did it. And then be like, well, we got backstage? Well, pizza? Yeah.
What's a treat?
We got wings? Down. And then you kind of wake up again and you're like, oh, this is not the final show.
Oh, wait, we have 26 more shows to go.
Yeah, so that's what's been on my mind lately is that how to not make every after show a kind of like eat whatever.
But I imagine you're adrenalized, it's midnight.
Yeah, and it's just such a bizarre schedule.
You just have to change what the reward is or your definition of reward. If like right now, wings or pizza is like the reward, how do you recalibrate fresh grapefruit.
Yes. And then, of course, because you're in these different towns and stuff,
right?
There's always something kind of exciting, even though I know deep down that I'll never go more than 2 or 3 years without being in Philadelphia or that part of Pennsylvania. I was just there and I still just couldn't stop myself from eating so many cheesesteaks
right.
while I was there. But then you're always on to the next place that has right. its own thing. Like, then we were in Portland. You know, Portland, I'm sure if
Portland,
I,
Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. Uh-huh. So I'm sure if in Portland, Oregon, I wanted to eat something that I would have found to be healthier, that probably my body was craving a little more, like some, I don't know.
Coffee.
Rainbow and- chart. Whatever, things that have vitamins. I was in town and I just happened to drive past a place that was a wings place called Fire on the Mountain.
Mm.
And
wow.
it's named after a Dead song. And I'm a Grateful Dead fan. And I was just kind of like, we got to get
like, how could I not go in there?
And then I just remember afterwards eating and I was just kind of like, and they were really good wings, but I was just kind of like, my body wasn't looking for this. It was,
right.
I don't know. So yeah, it's not easy. I'm
Wait,
sure.
Do you have a policy of drinking or not drinking before or during a show?
I generally don't drink on tour.
Mm-hmm. At all?
Almost never.
Wow. Interesting.
It's a good strategy. We were just talking about
That's pretty healthy. We were?
Yeah, because I was saying I'm trying not to drink Monday through Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
But then last night was Friday and I had red wine and like you feel it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's like
But with sleeping, drinking is not
I was
so
drinking last night, you know, back in New York. Link up with the old squad.
At the Izakaya.
We're at the Izakaya.
Wearing a lacoste.
We're having these things called the oolong highballs. It's soju and oolong is a mix. And we just like threw back like three or four of those. And then we went out. I drank a lot and I just didn't get that drunk. So it is a funny thing where I can drink, I think. But it's...
but you don't drink on tour.
And I've never been I've never just been that into it. I'm a real like take it or leave it type person. So anyway, on tour though, specifically, because in the early days, there was a few notable times where I lost my voice, which is so terrifying. And you talk to any singer, they probably have had a story about a time they lost their voice. And it's just traumatic. And obviously, it's not only, you know, not being able to do your job,
right.
which everybody could relate to the stress of that. But then there's also this... It's like a psychological horror experience because it's also, and even anybody who's ever lost their voice just knows that like suddenly this thing that you take for granted.
Yeah.
When you know it's if you ever lost your voice and somebody came into the room and you just turn around, and then it's crazy. It's like a Brothers Grimm fairy tale. So put all the stress of work, the stress of expectation, thousands of people driving to see. It's a really bad feeling. So. Anything I can do. And I've gotten so much better. We used to only play for like 70 minutes, speaking of time length. And, you know, now we can play anywhere from 2 to 3 hours because I really feel like, you know, we got a lot of songs. We want to give the people their money's worth. So I've got a warm-up routine and everything that helps me. And just drinking, it just throws that extra rent, just makes it that much more likely that I'll wake up in the morning feeling croaky.
Mm-hmm.
Like even right now, my voice is a little more hoarse from drinking oolong and soju all night. So I find that's always my little special treat is often the last night of the tour, wherever we were, like the last time we ended a tour, we were in Lisbon.
Uh-huh.
Went out to a bar, had a few drinks, and I was like, nice, this is
like,
treat myself.
Spicy margarita.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go
Burn
into
it
the
down.
Lightning round segment. Either or questions, you got to answer. Imagine you're familiar with this setup.
And it's like forever.
What's forever?
The either round. Or.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you get one the rest of life.
Maybe I don't understand.
Okay, you get a choice between two things, and you got to pick one, and like that's it for life.
Forever.
Yeah, forever.
Forever.
All right, ready?
Legally binding.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, for instance, so let's start with Cool Ranch or nacho cheese?
For Doritos? Or just for flavor profiles?
Yeah, I'm gonna go
it's with, a good point. There is ranch.
I wasn't ready for that comeback, but yeah. No, there's not ranch. There's Cool Ranch is only Doritos.
Yes, that's
TM.
Right.
That's really tough because they're obviously, they work together as a kind of yin and yang as part of the Frito-Lay portfolio of snacks. But
iconic.
At the end of the day, the classic to me is more nacho cheese. I would always start with that.
Yeah. Allie or Jack?
Oh, from...
The Acebo.
No, not
oh,
Jack.
From
not
A Star
Jack.
Is Born. No, Jackson.
Yeah, Jackson. Yeah,
sorry.
Kramer wrote that one. Yeah.
Right, so...
Allie or Jackson? Jackson Maine.
Well, Jackson Maine is dead.
That's a good point.
He killed himself, so I...
Spoiler alert, people, if you haven't seen it.
I'm trying to think, dude, is it better to honor the dead or show respect to the living?
Stick with the future.
I think, you know, Allie has the gift of continuing to be alive, and clearly she's doing big things with her career, and I actually keep seeing stuff about her. She's out there. So I'm going to honor the dead, R.I.P. Jackson.
Wow.
I actually... the quote I quoted most this past year was when he just goes, "Man, you just got to have something to say."
That's right.
And it's true. Like we said, with an article or whatever, like, what the F are you saying? Like,
yep.
Say something.
That's right.
You know? So I'm going to go with Jackson on that one. Not that anyone was asking me. Iced coffee or cold brew?
Iced coffee. And we did do a time crisis where I went on and on.
And I miss it, but I don't understand.
I never got any straight answers about this. I've been asking coffee people. I understand, like, intellectually that you could brew something cold or brew it hot and then make it cold.
Right.
I get that. But I would always talk to people and I'd be like, sour brew. Sour brew,
exactly.
Cold brew tastes sour to me. And it's like, there's, scientifically speaking, there's no reason why that should be the case. Coffee can be sour.
Right.
But it must just be the beans. And I was like, I don't know, man. Every time I go somewhere and they have cold brew, it tastes worse to me than iced coffee. To the point that in LA, for instance, if I have the choice between, and I'm sure I'm missing out on some good stuff, but if I have a choice of going to the kind of a hip, you know, like high-end coffee shop that has cold brew, or just go and get a tall boy of iced coffee at Coffee Bean with their weird crushed ice.
Ooh, the crushed ice.
I go to Coffee Bean.
Right.
And I like strong coffee.
Right.
Like when it comes to like hot coffee, I want it strong as possible. So I don't understand what's going on. I think we need to figure it out. I would like to think at Bon Appetit, you would have the resources.
Yeah,
to,
we can invest a little bit of time into this.
To figure it out. Yeah, for me, it's iced coffee all the way, and it really bothers me that now you can sometimes go to places and ask for iced coffee, and they say, well, we got cold brew.
It's not synonymous. I mean, that is, like, the truth of it. They're not the same thing.
Cold brew, it's borderline nasty to me, but again, I know people would be like, well, you just haven't had the right one.
Right.
You haven't had the right strain.
Malibu or Down the Shore?
Does Down the Shore mean Jersey Shore?
Doesn't it always?
Well, I guess are there other places where people say going down the shore?
I don't think so. I think that's a Jersey.
Right.
Thing.
Yeah. It's yeah. When you grew up.
So you're asking him to choose a geographic lifestyle.
Well, yeah. You're either gonna hang out down the shore the rest of your life, or you're gonna hang out like at Soho House in Malibu the rest of your life.
In the boo.
Oh, of course I'm gonna go down the shore. Yeah, I've like memorable experiences of growing up being in places like Wildwood, New Jersey. Yeah, in Malibu, it's very beautiful, but if anybody's ever spent any time there, the city planning is atrocious. I mean, half of it shouldn't have ever been built.
True.
Shout out to Mike Davis, City of Courts, LA historian. But also, the fact that it's just dangerous. You basically have a busy highway bisecting where one place, you know, half of the mountains and the places where people park, and then the beach. It's like absurd.
Nature's having its way with that part of the world too. Though you're like,
Jersey's a mess, but you know, still.
Well, you're not gonna like fall into the ocean.
Yeah, and also Malibu. I mean, Santa Monica does, but Malibu doesn't have a boardwalk. Where am I? I want to buy a funny T-shirt. I want to shoot a BB gun at a metal clown.
Saltwater taffy.
I want saltwater taffy and fudge.
Not getting
a lot of fudge down the shore.
I feel like fudge is one of those things that just got stuck in the 70s and never made it to the 21st century.
I love fudge. It's hard to make.
Oh, really?
It's a confection.
Yeah. I'm always trying to think of what's the like millennial disruption that hasn't happened yet.
Maybe it's fudge.
It's in a little like tasteful box, and we mail you one a week.
Right. Artisanal fudge.
All right. It's all lowercase fudge. There's a period at the end. Just fudge. You paid $29.99 a month.
Yes.
You don't have to go down the shore for fudge anymore.
Nope.
Fudge paid.
I also love it as a curse. You know.
Oh fudge.
Oh fudge.
Oh fudge.
Yeah.
Let's bring that back.
All right. I hate to put you on the spot. Bob or Jerry?
Bob Weir, Jerry Garcia.
Yeah.
Well, this comes back to the same question, which. I guess it seems to be a big preoccupation of Bon Appetit, which is, do we honor the living or the dead? And
well, let me amend that question. You can, from now on, when you listen to the dead, whether listening to a Jerry song or a Bob song.
Well, okay.
Weren't they more collaborative than that? I mean, I'm not a big Deadhead at all.
Of course, they're collaborative on stage as a pair of guitarists, but they. As far as songwriting goes, they each kind of had their own little team to some extent. So Jerry would write with Robert Hunter, who actually died this year, amazing lyricist. And Bob wrote with him a little bit, and then he kind of linked up with his own dude. So more of my favorite Dead songs are Jerry songs.
Okay.
But I think, you know, you couldn't ask for a better steward of the legacy than Bob. But yeah, if I had to pick my top five Dead songs, they're going to be all Jerry songs. So.
Great. So once
and
again, we're
and also
honoring.
Again, Bob has the gift of being alive.
So he doesn't need your support.
On the Bon Appetit podcast, we honor the dead.
Got it.
I miss this episode of TC, but popcorn or raisins or popcorn and raisins?
Well, that's kind of an ongoing story arc. It's very...
I brought examples. I know maybe, you don't like popcorn. On the way in, I was like, oh, I was like, I'm going to make popcorn. It's so perfect. And then the raisins, and I love popcorn.
Yeah.
So the time that you said that you didn't care for popcorn, I was aghast. Like, just
you
know, disappointed.
I think
popcorn's okay. Maybe.
But you're like, you said, like, you can't imagine eating. Exactly.
No,
which I don't have that.
But I really don't like raisins that much.
Right. And then someone brought up bringing them together. And then on the way in, I was like, oh, this is like, I love popcorn so much. I'm going to like bring in some popcorn.
Yeah.
But you also make your own popcorn.
Popped the popcorn in the comfort of my own home.
Like in a pan?
Yeah. Like a round sided lidded pot.
Yeah.
But then on the way in, I was like, this is really very rude. Like this person has said he doesn't quite care for this food. And now I'm literally bringing you a thing that you don't really like and being like, yeah, no.
Well, I haven't tried
it.
And just the whole context is that this guy on our show, one of our co-hosts, Seinfeld 2000, he proposed, because we often try to, I'm even doing it here with fudge. I can't help myself. I'm a musician second. I'm a businessman first and foremost. I love coming up with get rich quick schemes
right.
and then never doing them.
Yeah.
And so we were always trying to think of something that could be, you know, the next great snack food.
Yeah.
And at some point he proposed a prepackaged popcorn and raisins combo, which the rest of us thought was so disgusting. And it's kind of been this ongoing thing where we still think it's disgusting, but there is that businessman side of me that say, hey, I don't need to like it, but if I can make money off of this, sign me up. So I'm right on the fence about it, but I do think fundamentally the texture of popcorn and raisins together just sounds so disgusting.
It's not going to work. I'm confident in that. The crunchiness and the things that are going on with the popcorn and the chewy stickiness of the raisin. But then, you know, then even that I was, you're going to go for it. Okay.
Well,
this is just the plain salted. Adam?
ASMR.
Okay, so I just had
flavor
some...
Flavor-wise, like sweet and salty works, but...
And also, we just tried it with golden raisins, which is helpful.
Golden are much more aesthetically pleasing than the dark ones.
Definitely with the popcorn, you get that golden. Whoa.
It's not disgusting.
Okay.
I think with the darker raisins and the popcorn...
I don't think so. Oh, flavor-wise, it's fine.
Yeah.
But it's a little like gorp, like nuts with raisins.
Yeah. M&M's or M&M's
But
with
M&M's
popcorn.
With popcorn is way better.
Yeah, I'm just one of those people. I'm always happy when there's not raisins in something.
I really appreciate you trying it.
That was also tough, you know, growing up in New Jersey where...
This is
Do they have Entenmann's everywhere? Feel like I asked...
Entenmann's,
They have Entenmann's everywhere. Do they have Stella Doro everywhere?
On the East Coast for sure.
When with Entenmann's, they had some sort of like coffee ring or, you know, some garbage like that. And I was just so disappointed that there were raisins in it. I had spent so much time as a kid picking the raisins out. And
the Danish with the raisins is just like
terrible.
Mom,
why
did you get the raisins?
Yeah.
I have a girlfriend who always refers to them as surprise raisins. She's like, raisin I can deal with, but a raisin where I'm not expecting it is like absolutely abhorrent.
Yeah.
So like an oatmeal raisin, an oatmeal cookie, there's a good chance there might be a raisin in there and you're prepared for that. But if somebody drops raisin into your popcorn, it's going to be like jarring.
Yeah. Imagine you're at the movies.
Right.
Just get a large popcorn.
What the
just
hell?
Munching and about halfway through. There's a raisin in it.
That would be, people would run screaming from the theater.
Yeah. Right,
two more. Both living.
Two more.
Bruce or Billy Joel?
Well, I do have sympathy for Billy Joel because I think as far as the tri-state heavyweights go, he's always been disfavorably compared to Bruce as somehow being less serious or something. And then also the fact that Billy Joel clearly identifies with being Italian, but Bruce actually is Italian, which not everybody knows because he doesn't have an Italian last name, but you know, Bruce is...
That's not a German last name?
Springsteen is originally Dutch, but he said that's from the Irish side of his family, and they don't even remember, you know, who's the old man Springsteen. Then the other side of his family, the Italian side, which is a very classic East Coast combo, Irish Italian. The last name was Zirilli. Once you talked about that on Time Crisis, like given some of the anti-Italian sentiment in the country, what would happen if he was Bruce Zirilli?
Right.
You know, yeah. I would be supporting him, but you know,
he would have been like Bruce Z.
Maybe it would have been Bruce Z.
Yeah.
So anyway, I do have sympathy for Billy Joel, but and I'm a fan, but I am from New Jersey, and it's got to be Bruce, you know.
Bruce.
Bruce. Yeah. Okay.
Bruce Z.
Last question, as we always ask, butter or olive oil?
Oh, you know, actually, I'm sure I would have said olive oil when I was younger, but now I've come full circle. It's butter.
Back to butter.
Yeah, because especially when you go to a restaurant and they put out some nice bread, I dip it in olive oil. I hate it, actually. For a long time, I was kind of like, this felt like chic or something.
Right, we're grown up now.
Put a little bit.
Yeah.
But now, actually, going to, we were at some random steakhouse in Midtown a couple nights ago, and they brought out, like, hot rolls and there's butter.
Yeah.
And then the funny thing is, even at like a nice Italian restaurant where you would think, oh, they have this great bread, I'm going to dip it in the olive oil, I'd rather put it on like some really nice butter.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
I love butter so much. I've been thinking about butter and bread. I wrote a newsletter about bread and butter recently.
Yeah. I mean, I use olive oil much more in my day-to-day, but I enjoy butter.
Oh, yeah.
More.
And I'm sure if I knew something about cooking, which I intend to.
Sure.
I intend to, as you know, once I get off the road.
As time goes on.
I'm a little too old to not really know about cooking, but I'm sure that probably opens up all these other dimensions. Because, yeah, I'm sure a lot of food I love is made with olive oil, not butter. But as far as just sitting down with a piece of bread.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed when they don't have butter.
Ezra Koenig, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Carla.
My pleasure.
I'm Alex Beggs, and this is Cook, Marry, Kill. Cook. This week's new Basically recipe is a greens gratin that I want to eat right now. It's 4 bunches of kale or chard, 2 cups of heavy cream, and don't even think about swapping for oat milk, cheddar cheese, a crispy panko breadcrumb topping. Only a Grinch or a lactose intolerant Grinch couldn't love that. Basically shows videos for every recipe step, and I love how you can see the cook using a quarter sheet pan as a lid for the cast iron skillet when they wilt the greens. Clever! A quarter sheet pan is a great Christmas gift, by the way. I got one for my brother, who, don't worry, doesn't listen to podcasts. Find the recipe called Greens Gratin with all the cheese on eatbasically.com. Mary, I want to walk down the aisle with a nice, cold, frothy can of La Colombe's Peppermint Mocha Draft Latte. I had a can of this bougie stuff while I put mismatched ornaments on my Christmas tree this weekend, and I felt the holiday spirit coursing through my veins. So maybe it was 2.5 cups of caffeine and 13 grams of sugar. It tasted like a Thin Mint York Peppermint Patty milkshake without being too painfully minty in the mouth. You know what I mean. Did it taste even better because it was free from a box sent to our office? Maybe, definitely. Track them down if you can. Kill. I want to kill the words new year, new you. I can't handle that pressure. The old me took 31 years to build. What's so wrong with old me? Besides the dandruff. Also, if I needed so much work, why didn't anyone tell me in, like, July? I have other things going on this month. I don't have time for a total personal reinvention. Also, according to one survey, 4 out of 5 people don't accomplish their New Year's resolutions anyways. We promise ourselves too much. As if some New Year's fairies go to bippity-boppity-boo us into skinnier jeans on January 2nd. It takes 66 days to build a habit, supposedly. So ease into it, people. I propose, instead, New Year, new used bike. Consider alternative transportation in 2020. That's the only thing I could think of that starts with a U sound, but it's still a nice idea. Cars are clogging our streets and ozones. Kill the unrealistic, aspirational, overburdened new you, and start 2020 being happy with a you you've spent all that time turning into.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced and edited by Emma Wortsman, with additional programming help from Carrie Polis and Elise Inamine. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to reach out to us about this episode or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.